Iskcon 50. It's a little bit like the Maha Mantra. We're hearing it again and hearing it again, and it doesn't get tiresome. It's like Krishna, he's ever fresh. Starting from the fall of 2015, actually the end of the summer of 2015, with Srila Prabhupada's departure from Calcutta. Huge festival. When I describe this, I can't help but comment. An indoor stadium with air conditioning in Calcutta? Those of you that haven't been to Calcutta, you don't know what's very special about that. 35,000 people. Place was full. Ticketed event. To honor Srila Prabhupada's departure from Calcutta on the Jaladutta. And VIPs and government people and scholarly people and honoring Srila Prabhupada. And then his travel, the places that he stopped in South India, two ports, Cochin and one other, and big festival. Then arrival in September, arrival in Boston Harbor. Before that, our North American festival. There's going to be another one this year sometime. I don't know the date yet. September, I think. Anyway, ISKCON 50. So then at our GBC meeting, prior to the GBC meeting, I'm going to show you some things that were presented at the International Leadership Sangha, ILS. Everything has to have an acronym now. Just like the place where I'm staying is the IFAST house. What's that? Bhakti Tirthamaraj gave it a name. So, Institute for Applied Spiritual Technology. Very small print, Hare Krishna. Real small print, so you can't even see it. It's invisible. Hare Krishna. Get a chair for Ravindra. So, at the ILS, it was ISKCON 50. And then at our GBC meeting, encouraging all the sannyasis and GBC members, and wherever you go, emphasize, speak on the theme of ISKCON 50. I go to China, they have this whole document. When you come to, those who come to visit China, ISKCON 50, please, whatever you do. So we're having a Gita Nagari event, and it's ISKCON 50. But it's, it doesn't get tiresome. Because it's Krishna's at the center, and our founder Acharya has given us this wonderful society. So we're appreciating from the corolla of the lotus, the petals of ISKCON, and now it's time to look forward. I mean, part of the reason that this is one of our topics, besides its common sense, it's inspired by Anuttama, our communications minister. Many of you know him. We're on the Jaladutta, the boat going around the Boston Harbor. Some of you were there probably. And I don't know, they had a lot of people on that boat. And different persons were called upon to say something. What does Prabhupada's arrival in Boston 50 years ago mean to you? That was, the prompt that we're supposed to speak about. I admire Gautama in many, many ways, and one of them is he's a very forward-thinking person. And he had obviously put a lot of thought into the question, and his message was basically, at least the part that I remember, was Prabhupada was always, whatever result came, he was always thinking, what's next? Just give an example. I was a college student once upon a time. Previous lifetime as a college student. And Burijan Prabhu, who has helped me in my Krishna consciousness from literally the day one, he gave me my first Back to Godhead magazine. It was in the student union of the university that we attended. I didn't know what it was. He knew what it was. He just gave me a copy. And it was stapled, mimeographed. I mean, some of you don't even know what a mimeograph machine is. It's, you crank it and it prints out something. Staple it together with Back to Godhead magazine. So the Back to Godhead magazine had an article by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And I didn't even know the meaning of the title, what to speak of the text. The Vedanta, it's ontology and morphology. And I didn't even read it until I got teased by fellow students. They saw it on my clipboard and said, are you into that? I don't know. But they're teasing me, prompting me to let me find out what that is. So I read it. It took me 3 hours to read like a 5-page article with a dictionary by my side. You know, every third or fourth word I had to look it up because Bhaktisiddhanta's language is like that. And making notes in the margin like you do when you do academic work. And 3 hours later, time just went by. When you're having fun, you just... And when I finished the article, I understood some things, but one thing I very clearly understood, I was lifted to a place of consciousness that I never knew before. It wasn't because it was academic or, you know, difficult language, because of Bhaktisiddhanta's spiritual power. That was my introduction. So I've had liking, to say the least, for Bhaktisiddhanta since. And others that have that potential or capacity to lift one to another position. So, that was my first Back to Godhead magazine. Then some time passed and I became a Hare Krishna member. I was living in the Boston Temple. This is summer of 1970. And Prabhupada gave this mandate. Oh, so many Back to Godhead magazines were distributed last month, so let us increase it by, you know, 10 times. It wasn't double it, it was 10 times, and he assigned a quota to the Boston Temple so much, the Montreal Temple so much, and the LA Temple so much, and the London Temple so much. And we were, how are we going to do this? But Prabhupada gave the instruction, do it. So we found out a way to do it. And then, oh, that's very good. Now we should increase by... It was just always, whatever happened was the next step. Another example. I'm sure some of the Prabhupada disciples remember when those group of devotees that were preaching in India, they purchased Mercedes-Benz buses in Germany and drove them all across the Middle East, through the mountain region, into India, and started a traveling program where they would set up pandals and using a Fairchild projector, showed Yadavar's video, Your Ever Well Wisher, whatever it was, and then sold books. Prabhupada said, I had this vision years ago, we should have 100 such buses traveling crisscrossing throughout all of India. Like wherever it was always what's next. So that was Anuttama's message to us on the boat. We're celebrating ISKCON 50, and while we're celebrating and communicating to the world, these are the gifts of ISKCON to the world. Like Prabhupada would say, I've not come as a beggar, I've come as a giver. He came to give. And boy, did he give. But he was always thinking, what's next, what's next, what's next? Another, just, you know, local example. Once upon a time, Prabhupada instructed. He wrote it in his Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then he instructed. Those centers that have sufficient strength, having taken the asset that Krishna has given and developed it nicely, important to do that, then they should have some rural project that shows by example self-sufficiency, because the teachings teach simple living, high thinking, and he was a theme, simple living, high thinking, so we should demonstrate it. So New York Temple gave some money to a devotee named Janeshwar, Prabhupada's disciple, and said, go find a farm. And he looked upstate New York, and he looked in New Jersey, and didn't find something he liked, so he came way over here to Kidanagari, and this was the New York farm. It was too far away to have the connection that was a small item that wasn't thought of ahead of time. But it was great farmland. So he bought the farm with no support from an urban center. Big mistake. But here we are. So then Prabhupada wanted to, the next step, Prabhupada wanted to come to Gitanagari and establish Varnashram, a simple living, high thinking model. That was very clearly that last trip that he tried to make and only got as far as London and went back, it was to come to Gitanagari and take it the next step. He was always wanted, whatever was there, appreciate, feel gratitude, Krishna is very kind. Now how do we take it the next step? So that's what this discussion is. ISKCON 100. What do we need to do today to get to that place where the topic is moving into the next 50 years? So Anuttama said this on the boat. We should be thinking. The forward-thinking people should be thinking. What do we need to do so that we'll all be celebrating, or some of the younger ones here will be celebrating ISKCON 100? What do we need to do? So that this topic. And I'm going to start with something that just a few slides from ILS. Remember, everything has to have an acronym these days. So, International Leadership Sangha, where there was a presentation out of the 86 different presentations. One of them was some slides that are from here on the work of one devotee from Russia whose name is forget his name. Krishna something. He's an academic type. He spent 3 years assiduously studying, like Ravindra was saying, you know, compulsively studying, obsessively compulsively studying, neurotically studying the topic of what from the history, particularly European history, but history of religions of the world, you know, Middle East history also, religious organizations, even non-religious organizations, which organizations survive and which don't survive? What are the elements that make them survive? What are the elements that make them expire? Very important question if we want to celebrate ISKCON 100. So he made this presentation to a committee of the GBC called Organization Development Committee. They liked it so much. He presented it. It was refined because his English isn't so good. So this was presented at the ILS. He calls it the four generations, and the application within ISKCON is the first generation is our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada. Second generation is his direct disciples. The third generation is pretty simple, disciples of his disciples. And then the fourth generation is disciples of the disciples of the disciples. So then he created this chart that we'll see this again one more time. But during the first generation, the founder Acharya had an intention, and his intention was given to him by his spiritual master to take the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the English-speaking parts of the world, following the template of his spiritual master. So Rabindra Swarup Prabhu shared with us what that was, at least some parts of what that was like. And then he gave instructions how to do that, and there's context. We'll see a little bit what that means. Particularly in the form of his books. And as the founder Acharya, the ultimate managing authority and the ultimate spiritual authority, he addressed different issues. So what you see is in the second generation, to some degree, persons have some understanding of his intention, but better is, you know, context. Like Hari Sori and the different biographers of Prabhupada's life, how Prabhupada dealt with different situations based upon context. But the intention becomes less clear in the second generation. And in the third generation, context and intention diminish, but then instructions. And in the fourth generation, if instructions aren't sufficiently upheld, the organization weakens to just dealing with issues without reference to instructions. I'm just giving you a thumbnail of, you know, like an hour and a half presentation. So what's very, very important in all of this is the instructions are essential to ensure, I'll say it multiple ways in different forms, but an essential message from my whole presentation is not only the leadership, but also the membership of ISKCON must, if ISKCON is going to endure, become thoroughly conversant with Prabhupada's instructions. At the ILS, these 1,000 leaders that attended, they were given a survey specific to Prabhupada's instructions. And I left those slides out, but it was shown in the finale of the ISKCON Leadership Sangha, which was, of the 1,000 leaders, how many had read Prabhupada's books? Leaders. The statistics were embarrassing. Nearly one third of the persons that were asked wrote back, submitted an anonymous. They didn't have to identify who they were. No, I'm too embarrassed. They didn't even say how many times they'd read Prabhupada's books. The average of those that did respond was they had read Bhagavad Gita once. Leaders. Giving leadership to the international Sangha. What to speak of the followers. Now, some of you here are not, quote, leaders, and you've taken Bhakti Shastri, and some of you have taught Bhakti Shastri and read these books multiple times. I'm just speaking, you know, the survey. And this 3 years worth of study, you know, of organizations, divisions within those organizations, in, within Islam, within Christianity. Vast study. Very interesting. So, during Prabhupada's time, he was, as the founder acharya and the ultimate managerial authority, he arranged marriages, and then divorce became a question. And he addressed that in his own way. Initiation for women, he addressed that in his own way. The relationship between GBC and temple presidents, there was some tension in that territory, and Prabhupada provided the mechanism for addressing that. This is the first generation. Then he gave instructions as the founder acharya, the ultimate spiritual leader and the ultimate managerial authority in one person. Not group, but one person. And so he gave his instructions in his books and in descending order, his lectures, then conversations, then letters. And these are compiled. There's so many things to say. I'll say one thing. In this devotee's study, he explained that Muhammad was emphatic that persons should not write what he said. They should just take his teachings that are in his books, because what he said has context, and over a period of time the context will be lost. So he said at least for three generations only the books, only the Quran, just the principal foundational instructions. And of course some people didn't follow it, and then other ideas came out, including jihad and other things, but it's not in the Quran. At least that's what some historians of Islam say. So distortions of the teachings are a problem as time passes, especially if people don't know the teachings. So on the one hand, you know, some historians indicated that the fact that Prabhupada was recorded so many things, it's a detriment, because it may obscure what's in his books. And, you know, without going into it, the books are the primary source of understanding the intention, and understanding to whatever degree context. Okay, so personal instructions, intention and context, those two terms at the far right of the chart. Because of different natures and circumstances, different followers had received different instructions, which may appear contradictory without understanding the intention and context. One afternoon Prabhupada was speaking about his displeasure that some disciples, due to weakness of their devotional practice, were becoming then subject to again to their former tendencies of growing their hair and turning to rock music. And he, you know, was in a mood about it. The darshan ended. Someone came who had just been married within the short period of time before that, and the devotee said, Prabhupada, now that I'm married, I'd like to have this, take this opportunity along with my occupation to get together a band and do some rock music and promote Krishna consciousness that way. And Prabhupada gave us permission, and he left happy. And Hari Sori said, Prabhupada, you were so heavy about, you know, you don't like this. You don't like it when your disciples do this. Prabhupada's reply, context. There's intention and there's context. The context was, he said, this devotee would have done it anyway, even if I said no. So better that he not violate the instructions of the spiritual master. So I said yes. Now supposing somebody doesn't know the context, or the intention. And they refer to Prabhupada's head. You get the idea. Context means time, place, circumstance. This is slide directly from this devotee. And intention, he just added these words because he's Russian speaking, will, mood, and purport. Just like yesterday, during the unity and diversity discussion, I showed a picture of Bhaktisiddhanta side by side with a picture of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Their style was quite different. You could say their mood. But, you know, what they wanted was the same thing. Their approach was different. Krishna was at the center, and bringing people to Krishna was their objective. Coming in disciplic succession. Their personality and their style differed. But the purport wasn't different. Read Bhaktisiddhanta's writings on some topic and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings on the same topic. And they're not carbon copy, but they're so identical, it's wonderful. Not surprising, it's just wonderful. Some terminology and some something, but so similar. What's that? Is that a person or a cat? Baby. Okay. Let's see what happens. Okay, so now you see the chart again. That's all the slides I have. The only other slide is a slide of Prabhupada. So, the theme, once again, of how to ensure that ISKCON 50 takes place is there must be for the fourth generation, third generation, fourth generation, and increasing, not just Bhakti Shastri, but as Tamahar was saying, because I'm borrowing from his message on education and training, the continued ongoing training of our members. Not just because we're compulsive, it's because we wish to preserve the society and keep it on track. It's not optional, it's essential. But just to add to this message, this was presented at the ILS in Mayapur in February. We just saw it again and refined it again at a GBC committee called the Organization Development Committee, and reviewed it again, and this is going to be a centerpiece of the midterm meeting of the GBC, and then the centerpiece, or a centerpiece, including unity in diversity, for the sannyasis, gurus, and GBC, that has an acronym too, SGGS. Last S is Sangha, so sannyasis, gurus, and GBC, Sangha, because these are globally leaders in different ways, leaders as sannyasis, leaders as gurus, leaders as GBC. Some have all three hats, some have one, some have two, but they're leaders, and they should understand the importance of this. And many other things, but this is going to be a centerpiece. Because, why? We'd like to ensure that we put in place today things that will make sure we have a strong Hare Krishna movement another 50 years from now. Now I'm going to repeat some of the messages that Krishna Nandini and Vrajalila spoke yesterday during our recap of the breakout session. But it's part of the bigger picture. We must do these things because it's part of the instructions of our spiritual master to do so. It's one of the petals of what he gave us. the ISKCON pedals. He wanted these things. They're means towards a healthy, happy, sustained, exemplary International Society for Krishna Consciousness going forward in time. The root of all of it, saying it one more time, is the instructions, the shiksha of our founder Acharya. He's the primary shiksha guru for anyone that's part of ISKCON. He's not going to be replaced by somebody else. Somebody else may come along. Prabhupada said like this. There may be, in the future, there may be many Acharyas, but there's one founder Acharya. That's the unique position. If someone is going to be part of ISKCON, they may choose to not be part of ISKCON. You know, so diverse, they don't want the unity. But part of ISKCON means he's our founder Acharya, and what we, our teachings, our structures, our conduct, our care, our lives are grounded in his instructions. They're nourished by his instructions. And what are those instructions? Not just euphemism, but what are those instructions? And, you know, the holistic picture of those instructions. So I have some notes that I'm going to refer to. The first point has already been said. We want that, so with the university, unity in diversity, the unity element is the instructions. Or what is the intention of our founder Acharya? What did he want to give us? He wanted to give us what Lord Chaitanya wanted to give us. Lord Chaitanya wanted to give Krishna Prema in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, that kind of Krishna Prema. And then all of the instructions are in pursuance of that. So a member of ISKCON, follower of Srila Prabhupada, is to receive as best they can, according to their capability, just like Prabhupada's initiation letter to Tamahar. According to your capacity, instruct the world. So to instruct the world, you need the quality yourself. Rooted in Prabhupada's instructions. Then you can take pieces from those instructions. That's what I'm intending to do next. So we want to be relevant and relatable to the world around us as time and circumstance of the world around us undergoes its interesting changes. Generally, it's degradation, directionally, but, you know, diversification. So here's a few examples. In our unity in diversity little subgroup, something that I didn't share with all of you because we ran out of time. We spoke about affiliates. Now, in our ISKCON law, Rabindra Sarup Prabhu will know it, the affiliate is used interchangeably with a center or a temple. We're modifying the language such that there's a temple and there's a certain... We're moving in this direction. We're wishing to move in this direction, I should say. That is, as ISKCON grows, ISKCON is growing, diversity is proliferating. And that's nice, it's natural, it's wanted. Now, how do those that go further and further into the diversity realm and further away from the unity realm, how do we look at those people? One of the things in our group was, on the one hand, they can be perceived as renegades. They present themselves as if there's ISKCON when it's convenient, and they're not part of ISKCON when it's not convenient. They're not accountable, but they take the brand, the name, or, you know, whatever it is, the equity of ISKCON without So we don't want to, you know, how do we regard those people, and how do we want those people to regard ISKCON? And then there's another side that says, well, they're devotees, so we don't want to just like saw them off and, you know, push them off to sea. What's the connection going forward in time? ISKCON. So there's an idea modeled similarly after the Catholic Church. Madhusevata had his finger in this one. There's different orders that are within the Catholic Church. And they look to the Pope, but they do things slightly differently. So there's, you know, there's standards that they must meet to be part of the Catholic Church. And then there's, you know, organizations that are affiliated with the Catholic Church, but they're not the Catholic Church. So then there's things that are outside those that are affiliated in a formal way with the Catholic Church. They're friendly. So it's an umbrella, not for the purpose of pushing people away or building a wall and sawing them off and casting them to a drift, but giving clarity as diversity proliferates. This is now a global picture, but it's happening in different places without anecdotal references. And it will continue, you know, as we move along the path of time. So connecting through a different nomenclature and a different set of commitment and obligation, you know, facility and responsibility to ISKCON. So ISKCON has its layers of structure. Other than, you know, persons breaking off. We heard some descriptions like that. In keeping with our founder Acharya's instructions, as the diversity and the number of ISKCON entities in the world increase, what's the governance structure for that? You know, Prabhupada, so we go through the history. Prabhupada started, and following Bhaktisiddhanta, he wanted to preserve after his departure this international society, so he established the GBC, and was very, very clear, repeatedly very clear about it. So now go forward in another 25 years. Will we have the same number of centers and the same number of devotees, or more likely a larger number of centers than a larger number of devotees? Likely more. So what's that governance structure going to look like? I'm just sharing little sound vibrations that persons that have been thinking about this topic for some time, the preserving of ISKCON for the next 50 years, that ultimate managing authority entity needs some examination. How many members, as we grow, should we have a football stadium and invite our GBC to come together in a football stadium and have, you know, a couple thousand GBCs? Not so good to conduct a meeting. So what's a good number? And if we have a manageable number, how are we going to oversee the GBC duties for the world, with an increased number of centers and the expansion into areas where presently there aren't centers? What's that structure going to look like? Just giving some sound bites. So the idea was, a few years of discussing this, there should be a limited number of GBCs, but per Prabhupada's instructions, there may be secretaries assisting a GBC. Any number of secretaries. But the responsibility goes to the GBC to see that the job gets done, but they can engage secretaries to assist them. So we came up, took 3 years, a nomenclature called the zonal supervisor. Just because no one else was using it, so we got a new one. Because there's all these other ones, national secretary, regional secretary, this secretary. So zonal supervisor, and then we established, Tamahar described, a college. Think of religious organizations that now there's universities, the Wesleyan College or this college, that college, or, you know, some of the Ivy League schools started like that, right? Religious schools to train their clergy, and then they became diversified. So, GBC College, it's a formal organization with a dean, a president, and et cetera, staff, and the building, as Tom Mahar described, building a college. Somebody's given the land, and they've committed the money, and they have the means to do it as part of a, but there'll be a college on this complex that's just dedicated for educating our leaders. It's starting with the GBC and then going down. That's something that we weren't doing, educating our leaders. Kind of on-the-job training, push somebody in the pool and see if they could swim. If they drown, well, you know, pull them out and push another one in. So going forward is training our leaders to fill a structure that permits reasonable ultimate managing authority meetings, then populating that group with people that have been trained before they get pushed in the pool. And give them some road tests before we give them the title, in a formal method of accountability and job performance. Very novel. We haven't been doing that. But that's just to help ensure ISKCON goes on, according to the instructions of our founder Acharya, because that's our frame of reference, to look into the future and see what's next. How are we going to handle? What do we need to do today to ensure that we have a good organization based upon the instructions of our founder Acharya? In our another item, in our little group over here yesterday afternoon, our breakout session on unity in diversity, one question was raised, which is relevant to going forward. As diversity proliferates, what's to ensure the unity? If it's just diversity with no unity, then it's chaos. It's not the ISKCON that Prabhupada gave us. The ISKCON that Prabhupada gave us had unity. So there has to be some principles while there's diversity. Just to refresh your memory, it's a very good example. Burijan instructing me that his service as a, when reviewing the Mayapur Institute for Higher Education, the model that they used was very different than the Vrindavan model, but he was just asked to evaluate, are the principles in place? Someone may do it this way, someone may do it that way, someone may do it another way, and that's just fine, provided the essential principles are in place. The principles make the unity, and diversity is just fine, provided there's principles. Now, who's the principal setter? Who's going to make that decision? Well, during Prabhupada's time, it was Prabhupada. And then he remanded or assigned authority to the collective GBC. I don't know if any of you have heard Bhakti Chumarish speak on this topic, but, you know, there are three things that he said that Prabhupada instructed him that hold him. The foundation for him. One of them is GBC is the ultimate managing authority of ISKCON. Another is never leave ISKCON. The third, I can't remember. Something about cooperation, I think. So, anybody has heard that third one? Anyway. The topic is going forward over the next 50 years, what do we need to do to ensure ISKCON is safe and healthy? And here's another, just this is kind of like a GBC report, I guess, because many of you don't hear from your GBCs, and I'm the GBC for some of you. you don't hear from me about these things, so now you're hearing about these things. It's part of my duty as a GBC. But there's another item is, what does it mean when Prabhupada wrote in his will, the GBC is the ultimate managing authority of ISKCON? What does that mean? Well, there's a 36-page paper that says what it means. And we've reviewed it a number of times, and now we're starting to circulate it with other entities that aren't GBC entities to take a look at it and see if they can, how well they can relate with what it says. Like any leader will do, they'll speak with their constituents to see this is a paper intended as, we're using this language, a foundational paper. Beyond the circumstance of today, it's just embedding or imparting something like what Rabindra was saying about the function of journals. Of, you know, what does it mean? So, you know, 20 generations later, it still means what it says, because it's something that Prabhupada gave based on his instructions. What does it mean? Looking at his intent and hit the context. So now, moving on, ISKCON, preserving ISKCON over the next 50 years, we have to be flexible while we understand principles. There has to be some flexibility. One of the things that came up in our Unity in Diversity group is there's different audiences. And as we grow as an organization, we have to be sensitive to, tuned into the different audiences and the relatability or the lack of relatability of how we present ourselves to people. You know, one of the persons in our group was from Hispanic background. So are we going to make ourselves relatable to the Hispanic group? The Russian group? There's some Russian devotees that came here from different places. Growing demographic in the United States of Chinese people, certainly in universities, and many of them like to go back to China, but some of them stay. I've noticed that it's called the Technology Corridor. Those of you that are from Washington, D.C., there's a loop that goes around Washington, 495, and then there's a 270 that goes kind of, you know, at 10 o'clock going northwest. There's a Citibank that says Citibank in English and Citibank in Chinese on Technology Corridor. Then you go off, you know, to go to Bayahari's home, and there's another Citibank that says Citibank in English and Citibank in Chinese. Not in Spanish. Not in Russian. Though there's Spanish and Russian. Anyway, you get the idea. We have different audiences. In a Nutama's perspective, ISKCON going forward, there were demographics that had significant impact on the Hare Krishna movement. One, the counterculture group in the 60s, 70s. Two, the wave of non-resident Indians coming to our country for their education and careers and living. And has a major impact on ISKCON. So, what are some other demographics that we should be tuned into and thinking about how to be relevant and relatable to them? One of the acharyas in this field, from my experience, is Devamrita Maharaj. He has people on his team that regularly send him what he calls trends. It's like their assignment is to know trends. And from time to time, he sends me some articles on trends. You know, we're holding the instructions and the mission very clearly in mind, at the same time trying to be relevant and relatable to different groups of people and what's out there in the world, what's on the horizon, what's moving, what's coming at us, what's the field in which we're moving. So having specific outreach for different groups, the millennials or the Spanish, or the, so we should try to be aware of and sensitive to and accommodating, making it comfortable for different audiences to come to our center and feel they have a place. Or maybe even not in our centers, just apart from our center, so they feel sufficiently comfortable so that when they do come to our center, and it's 95% non-resident Indians at our temples, at least in North America, they feel, well, you know, at least we have our group over here, Spanish people or young Western people or whatever people, relatable. You know, put the shoe on your foot and think if you're from one of those groups and you come to a Hare Krishna temple. There's diversity, but it's we need to pay attention to this so that we can be relevant and relatable to groups of people without compromising principle. Another example, I think, of an element of maturing going over the next 50 years is unity in diversity principle. But for example, Vrajalila's group commenting that we would like as a group to see that there's persons in the different communities that are tuned into devotee care. So a devotee care group. And a group of devotees in different communities that are into wholesome, healthy families. I mean, some people are already there. Some people wish to promote it for the sake of strengthening our community, because the community is as strong as our families are strong, so it's very important for our community. And we want to invite others to come in to such a wholesome, family, caring community. And then society that has these values. They're not going to happen without the effort to make it happen. It's nice, it's devotional service, the effort to make the instructions of our founder Acharya manifest. Another just practical example, it's going to happen anyway, but it's best if it happens by design. Different interest groups. Like, just one example is here in Gita Nagari in September last year. They're going to have another one this year, second annual physicians retreat. So groups of devotees in U.S. and Canada who by profession are medical practitioners, not necessarily medical doctors, can be nurses or physical therapists or whatever, something from the healthcare profession, come together and share their resources, their vision, their abilities, their strengths, their opportunities. Part of ISKCON, but very similar to the point that Tamahar made, if each one of us can do something, but you put five of us together working in a together spirit, we may have different vision or different emphasis or different style. Work together cooperatively, we can do the work of 25. So in specialized areas, it will make our, if we have better devotee care, if we have better health care, if we have better family, if we have better, etc., we'll be a stronger organization. And maturing means to pay more attention to these things. I'm tempted to say, I think I'll say it, financial resource. Again and again, you know, to have good education, to have this, to have that, have the other thing. It, you know, we can do on a volunteer basis for sure. But even the people that volunteer, they need some basic maintenance. And we're limited by the culture of poverty, by not having funds to do basic things. I'm looking at our leaders here in Devanagari. So much they could do if they had the financial resource. They'd have to, you know, kind of coax it out of people to do this and to do that. And Krishna is reciprocating. Parijat is very expert at getting government funding to do different things. Like we heard in New Vrajadam, not only, but a big part of the resource to do, to have what they have, is government funding. Not easy to get government funding. It's lots of paperwork and red tape. And anyway, it's a major issue that going forward we have to address. And you know, some of the people in the room may be called upon to give thought to and participate in, or whatever, that topic. One of the biggest reasons is in the Mormon Church is expanding, as they have enormous funds. They just spin the dial and decide where they want to have temples, Mormon churches, and boom. It's a long topic. Financial resource. We need to find out ways to address that. I'll say a few other things and I think I'll end. You know, there's lots of opportunity. We can look at the opportunity as challenges. We're not doing lots of things that we could be, should be doing. And a couple that came from Anuttama, because I consulted Anuttama, disclosure. I consulted Anuttama and Braj Vihari before making this presentation. What are points that you feel should be spoken on this topic? So they're basically strategic planning topics that they gave their response. Not so much like answers, but questions that need to be explored by thoughtful people. So here's one from Anuttama. The mission of the Hare Krishna movement for the first 50 years, in a very simplified way, could be open temples, make devotees, distribute lots of books. Okay. You know, there's some other things. Education, deity worship, part of temples. Education is part of temples. Do we, for the next 50 years, need to take a fresh look at what our aims and objectives are? Well, we heard one from Rajalila yesterday. We should be known as a caring organization. Krishnanandini, we should be known as an organization that has wholesome, happy, and healthy families. From the education and training group, we should not just see the persons who come to our temple as potential manpower to get tasks done, but potential persons to impart core Krishna conscious understandings, because we're becoming more and more congregational based. This is looking towards the future. To those of you that saw the ISKCON 50 video, Yadanath saying, you know, in the early days, everyone lived in temples. We didn't have an idea of anything other than that if one could be a devotee, you live in a temple, whoever you are, whatever you are. But now we're becoming more congregational based, and what, I don't know, 90%, more than 90% congregational based. So those persons that are congregational people, they haven't gotten that training of living in a temple before going out to become householders. They just become householders and then join the Hare Krishna movement. So that refinement that comes from the training, a little bit, you know, bumping into each other in temple life, bumping, you know, rubbing off some of the rough edges to become a little smoother. Temple life has a little bit of that involved in it. But so how to help, how to prepare that which is the ISKCON society of the future with the tools and the internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness, the sadachar, the proper Vaishnava conduct, the clarity of the understanding of the teachings. Anyone that's been a manager knows you grow and you have more problems because people think it's, you know, they're bringing with them their conceptions that aren't aligned with the teachings of ISKCON. And then, you know, the structure. Tamahar addressed this, but congregation people, largely Indian congregation, but not just Indian congregation, they relate strongly to the guru, more strongly than to the organization that the guru is part of. So where does the allegiance go to? It goes to guru, of course. So an education in what is the structure, because without the structure, persons that get booked, what are they going to come to? Those that have lived in a temple understand that. Those that have not, it's less relatable. And it's essential to preserve ISKCON going over the next 50 years. Two other points, and I'll end. This is Anutama's voice. Religious faith-based organizations, that's his language, are becoming more, there's interfaith, or there's dialogue between communities. ISKCON has been seen by many as insular. And there's reason. When you plant a tree, you put a fence around the tree so things don't gobble it. And then when the tree becomes mature, then you can take the fence away. So as an immature organization, we had some fences. Good, what is it? Strong fences make good neighbors, or good fences make strong neighbors, or something like that. So we have some fences. And we should, you know, some fences should be there. But then how do we, I'm sharing this as a leader, it comes to my attention at least once a week of some organization wishing to do something with our organization. How do we handle that? We want to encourage that. We also want to have some boundaries of what we will do, what we won't do. So what are those boundaries? So our organization doesn't become porous. Our organization has its integrity. It has its, you know, instructions and context and intention of our founder Acharya at the base. We are who we are, and we can be with other people. So not everybody can be with other people and not get porused out. So it's something that as an organization or as a community, we need to carefully consider. With, you know, maturity and wisdom and, you know, careful contemplation. So it takes time. It's a little painful. But it's necessary that we sustain over a period of time. And lastly, something that came out with in Rajalila's question at the end of the unity and diversity discussion. Be examples of character and values found within our teachings. Become known as a brand for persons who are exemplary in certain values. Not easy. We're an international society. And we are encouraging individual, spontaneous, and voluntary enthusiasm of service. Still, we're an organization, and somebody over there does something and it impacts how they view us over here. We can say, well, that was just one member. But then when it says to be more than one member, we get judged. It restricts our ability to carry forward the message and the mission. A very nice example of that is Vaisheshika Prabhu's attempts to rebrand book distribution, because it, you know, had a bad name. And some very strong, exalted devotees stepped away from book distribution and even stepped away from ISKCON because of the tactics in book distribution. No, he's done a fantastic job to help create, at least in North America, a brand, the style, the approach. And do we need to do that with other things? With Harinam. Harinam is increasing. Should there be some thought into how we do that as a society? What's our message? What's our, how do we, etc.? Just have to become a lot more mature and not curbing spontaneity and individual expression, but having some thoughtful contemplation direction giving to how we go forward in time. Look to the instructions of our spiritual master, the example that he set of how he did such things, and in a collaborative fashion try to create such a mood, consensus. It takes work. It takes time. We're busy. We want to get on to the next thing. But spending some time in refining these areas, back to circle back around to the, based upon the instructions. Something similar, I think, Ravindra, did you say, you know, somebody may have read Second Canto of the Bhagavatam, and you come back later, and so many things in the Second Canto of Bhagavatam that you just didn't see before, they were there. But as you grow and mature and you become a little more purified, you can understand so many things are there. So many things are there. Then read it again, and so many things you didn't see the second time are there the third time. So let it enter Shrinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Sadhavaha. Let it enter into our hearts and carry it in our hearts. And then far, far more likely we'll have ISKCON 100. Then our decision making and contemplating on all these things will be guided properly. It's there. Okay, I've talked too much. We have to take some time for some discussion. Ravindra, you're taking some notes. You want to comment something?
Thank you very much. This is very encouraging. Well, what I was thinking about, actually, while you were talking, sort of a parallel little thing, is how relevant ISKCON is to so many problems. If you sit down again and reread how Maharaj Parikshit received the age of Kali.
Can you turn the speaker? Just turn the speaker. You did it? Okay.
You'll find many, many instructions. I was just looking and reading some on.com, some article. Somebody making an article has nothing to do with us, that actually animals are people. Now, how long have we known that for? So things are moving in our direction. The whole ecological movement, the idea that if somehow we're going to save the planet, that basically what it amounts to is food production and energy production have to be as local as possible. Just that in itself would bring us to 2/3 of the way toward Varnashram Dharma.
Yes.
So we already have what people need, and what you were saying about different groups, to find ways to connect with people, to work on whatever problems they're working on, and also show them some of the solutions that we already have, be a very, very effective way of not necessarily having to convert people. Although I think it will come about, because I was just another thing I was making a note to look at, a very early BTG article that was printed about Sridhar Swami, about how chanting purifies the ether. Just having a kirtan or japa, even when you chant, the sound is in the ether. It purifies the ether. The ether becomes purified. Then air becomes purified.
The grosser element.
It goes all the way down. So I think there's a my belief is it's happening because people are changing. When the Hare Krishna movement started, you know, it was like my mother, who was a registered nurse. You're going to die if you don't eat meat. At least give meat to the children, you know. And then, you know, 15 years later, oh, your diet is so healthy. I mean, we're way ahead. And we can take these trends that are happening now in society and really foster them. And people will also appreciate what ISKCON is doing. And that way we will not be such an isolated group. I think we're having an effect anyway, but it's time to reinforce that effect. That's just one of the things I was thinking about, making a few notes on. There's more.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm looking at Krishnanandini. She usually has something nice to add. Would you like to add something? And Brajalila, I'll call on you next, so get ready.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much. That was food for thought. A couple things come to my mind, and that is, there's an old saying that between the big things that we cannot do and the little things that we won't do, the danger is that we won't really get anything done. And I think sometimes we have this big idea, you know, and I want to get some land and do this thing. But I think if each devotee thinks of themselves as a committee of one to represent Prabhupada and Krishna wherever you go, that I am the face of ISKCON wherever I go. And so how people see me treat my children, my spouse, my neighbor, the cashier in the store, how I speak, I am the promotion of the values of ISKCON. If somebody cuts in front of me in front of a car, for example, my response, how people see that. So if each devotee thinks, I may not be able to do this huge, big thing, but wherever I go, I can brighten someone's day by my Hare Krishna or my smile or my sharing a little prasadam or something. So if each devotee thinks like that, what little thing can I do to spread Krishna's message of hope and love? I think that would be very, very awesome. And then the second point is, this is my own kind of analogy. Everyone knows the story of the demigods and the demons churning the ocean of milk. And so Krishna says to the demigods, because you've offended your guru, you've lost some of your blessings, so now you have to do things a little differently. And so now you're going to have to work with the demons, cooperate with the demons. And never in history has Krishna ever told the demigods to cooperate with the demons. So my view on that is like making it kind of relevant for us. Like we're too little and weak to cooperate with any demons for anything, but at least we could think about how do we cooperate with other servants of God, Christians or Muslims, because they are very sincere to get the job done. And that analogy for me speaks like that. How do we cooperate with other servants of God to get some good things going in our community, to present a wholesome faith? When people get to know you, they like you, you know, as a Hare Krishna, as a devotee. Oh, look at that person. They're kind, they're gentle, they're nice, they're intelligent, and they get to know you and they like you. So I'm saying that if we're not so afraid that we'll lose our Krishna consciousness by interacting with others, in fact, we'll really gain it on a mature level, then I think that cooperative move with other faiths is really awesome idea.
I'm hearing the applause from your words. Prajalila, just a comment. Parents, naturally, my observation is, parents are very concerned with whom their children associate because that association can spoil a good child. So parents are vigilant about who their child associates with. And then as the child demonstrates, they're really clear about their values. Then they can start mixing with other people that have other values, and they're going to get washed out because they're really clear about their values. There's one anecdotal, one boy, mother told me, her son, teenage son, was being taunted. You're a mama's boy. Da 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 da. And he said, you bet I'm mama's boy. I love my mother. He was so clear about, you know, I can stand up to their taunt because that leads to the next thing, leads to the next thing, leads to the next thing. And he wasn't going to go to those other things because he was really clear about his values. So doing, you know, the second part is very much dependent upon the first part. So not everybody can do the second part until they're really clear about their values. And when they're really clear about their values, they can be anywhere and be that emissary and have people love the Hare Krishna people because they're really clear who they are. And they are not what they say they are what they are.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So thank you very much and thank you devotees. Thank you for that brilliant presentation. Because both days you were able to give so much clarity to where ISKCON is today and where we're hoping to go for the next 50 years.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. I want to do a little, share something a little different that perhaps might embarrass you a bit. However, devotee care, one of the values of the devotee care is integrity and example. What inspires devotees to practice these qualities is to see examples around us of others that are practicing these qualities. So I want to take just a moment to share how I have seen over the years, at least 25 years or so, His Holiness Ramapad Maharaj, how he has shown us by his practical example how to exemplify integrity and how to be an example of integrity. So as we have heard over the last few days in Gita Nagari, when we came here, although he was doing the VIHE, I want to share that the facilities here were definitely not facilities that most people would want to come and stay in Gita Nagari. They wouldn't want to come to even for a couple of days. And His Holiness Ramapada Swami has given his financial assistance, his heart, his soul, to be able to develop Gita Nagari to where we have Gita Nagari now, that people can come here and stay in some of these facilities that are built here. So we really want to thank him for having the integrity to have the vision to see Srila Prabhupada's mission and to be able to himself be an example to show us how to do it. We really appreciate that. One other thing that I really appreciate that he has done this weekend is to take the time to educate all of the devotees as to what's going on in ISKCON. As he said, we don't see that so often, that you can go and have your leader tell you every little thing that maybe you never even thought about, what's going on in the organization that you belong to. One of the things we talked about in devotee care, we want devotees to go away saying, I belong to ISKCON. I belong to Srila Prabhupada. I belong and I feel so wonderful to be able to belong to this amazing, caring institution. So again, with Ramapada Swami, we've seen him over the years. And I'm saying these things not because I want to embarrass him or just say some nice things.
I'll pay you later.
I'm saying these things because the longevity of ISKCON, really, as I have seen it in my time of being a part of ISKCON, is to be able to see examples and to be able to see how we can ourselves become those examples. As long as we have Srila Prabhupada disciples that are teaching us these examples, then let's hold on to it. Let's see how we can get as much internally, and how we can start living these examples. And lastly, I wanted to share my gratitude to you for inviting me to be a part of this amazing Sangha. I'm in all of your association. I'm second generation, someone that supposedly, according to the study, may be a little bit lacking in some of the four categories, at least at one category I may be lacking according to that study. However, I know for myself, for all of us, we are being inspired and we are being encouraged and we are being instructed by those followers of Srila Prabhupada that they are the examples, they live the examples, they are the integrity of this institution, and because of that, we can go on and do many wonderful things of showing how to care in our ISKCON organization. Thank you very much.
Two things. It's time for breakfast. Prabhupada had a vision, and part of that vision manifested here. It was unfulfilled. Something like Rabindra Swarup Prabhu indicated that Bhaktisiddhanta had a vision that was unfulfilled. Prabhupada helped to fulfill it. And Prabhupada had a vision specific for Gita Nagari. No, I was part of the group of devotees that went out and raised the money to buy the farm and then became like an orphan. But, you know, it shouldn't be like that. So a sense of fulfilling the vision of our founder Acharya is a major part of, you know, that sustained commitment over time you were sharing yesterday, like sustained dedication to a purpose. Helping to fulfill the vision. And another is, I shared this, you weren't here, but you know, one of the reasons it keeps bringing me back is in my mind, I see Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj smiling. And that smile is a very special smile. I know this is pleasing to him. That's from my heart. And if, you know, individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. There was a time when, you know, there was constrictions and restraints and it was less inviting. But when that became encouraging, individual, spontaneous, and voluntary, so much more came. It's the principle I experienced subjectively. And, you know, Dhruva and Parijata have been those kinds of leaders. Very inspired by their leadership. And you know, the yoga studio thing, you know, that were they did that. They saw the benefits and just carried it further somehow or another. So thank you, Dhruva and Parijata. Dhruva's not. Last thing, this is for your information. I checked with Satya Sara about how we're doing with finances, and he said it's borderline. We may break even, depends on this and that and the other thing. So at the reception desk, there should be somebody at the reception desk. Raghunandan, if there isn't somebody, make sure you're there. That if you wish, you can participate in any number of ways. The prasadam opportunity to host prasadam for the devotees, it's a standard ISKCON thing, feeding the Vaishnavas. There's some sweatshirts, it's a little warm, but sweatshirts, but was produced in part so that people can contribute something and help us meet the expenses, it's borderline. So if that's inspiring, to stop at the desk and participate in that way. And then the other, the 26 Second Avenue event for June 5th, that those little USB sticks, I believe, are still there. Give whatever you'd like to give for one of those, and take something. It's Satsuro Marsh speaking about Prabhupada and the good old days, or the whole event, those sheets, that information is there.